This is CICV 98.7 The Lake. Call us with your requests or pledge 250-932-9000.
Folks, welcome to our new show on CICV Radio called Voices of Original People. Currently, we're concentrating on the residential school program and some of the things that have gone on within this program for the next few weeks. On next week's show, we're going to have some interesting speakers, and they're going to be mentioned today as part of the research that I've been doing over the past few years. So I have a few questions, and please feel free to call in if you choose to be interviewed. You can call me direct at 250-466-4667. Or you can send us an email here to CICV Radio, and we'll call you back. So just a few questions that I have for the public. Just in general, how many residential schools do you think that there were in Canada? Well, according to a CBC report released last year, initially there were 1,100 students in 69 schools. And that was in 1931. Now, that seems a little low to me. That would mean that there would only be 15 students per school. We've all seen the pictures of these schools and the buildings and such, and we know that there was more than 15 students per school at the peak. In reality, there were about 130 schools, and the only province that didn't have any residential schools was in Newfoundland. With the last of these schools being closed in 1996, and at that time, over the years, it was assessed that there were 150,000 children put into these schools. Now, if you were listening to our radio station prior to my show, there was a group of young people, young DJs, doing their program. And as I sat here and I looked at them, I wondered, you know, I'm so thankful that they have the opportunity to be here and be doing their radio program and such. And then thinking, you know, 150,000 original children didn't have that opportunity. They didn't even have an opportunity to live at the best of times. Now, out of these 130 schools, we all know that there would have to be people employed to look after these children. So most of these people that were employed, teachers and such, would be designated non-native workers. So out of these 130 schools, would it be safe to say there would be at least two people per school that were teachers and such? There's probably more, we know that. But even at that, even two people per school, that would make 260 people that were guilty of crimes against children, abuse against children, and many, many other things. We also have verified that there's at least 4,000 children that have died in these schools. And some of them have died from disease. Some of them were malnourished and such. So it's quite staggering and very hard to admit that these kind of things took place. Dave asked me last week if I knew the when the last school was closed. I thought it was in the 70s or 80s. So, of course, the first thing I did when I got home was start going through notes and researching. The last residential school operated by the Canadian government was closed in 1996. Now, that's not that awful long ago. That is, you know, I was 26 years old at that time. And it was called the Gordon Residential School. And there was another one, White Calf Collegiate, in 1998, which was run by the LeBret Residential School Board. Now, we'll ask, how did these schools start in the first place? Were they legal? Why did they start? We all know that they were owned by the Canadian government. I have to keep saying that they were owned by the Canadian government. Well, first of all, there had to be some form of law formed in order to do this. And there was. Research shows that there was an act invented through Parliament called the Gradual Civilization Act, which was passed by the Fifth Parliament of the Province of Canada in 1857, prior to Confederation in 1867. The Act, and I'll read you a little bit about the research on this, the Act to encourage the gradual civilization of Indian tribes in this province and to amend the laws relating to Indians, commonly known as the Gradual Civilization Act, was a bill passed by the Fifth Parliament in the Province of Canada in 1857. The treaty built on the Act for the Protection of the Indians in Upper Canada, passed in 1839. but required the enfranchisement of any recognized male Indian over the age of 21 that was able to speak, read, write either English or the French language readily and well, and is sufficiently advanced in elementary branches of education and is of good moral character and free from debt. An enfranchised Indian would no longer retain the legal rights and habitats of Indians and would no longer be deemed an Indian by a regular British subject. Such enfranchisement was mandatory, but any male Indian could voluntarily enfranchise despite an inability to read or write or lack of school education, so long as he spoke English or French and was found to be of sober and industrious habits, free from debt, and sufficiently intelligent to be capable of managing his own affairs. Voluntary enfranchisement, however, required a 3-year probation term before it would come into legal effect. Enfranchisement required that Indians choose a surname to be approved by appointed commissioners, by which they would become legally known. The wife and descendants of an enfranchised Indian would also be enfranchised. They would no longer be considered members of their former tribe unless they were to regain Indian status through another marriage. Enfranchised Indians were entitled to a piece of land not exceeding 50 acres out of the lands reserved or set apart for the use of his tribe, as allotted by the Superintendent General of Indian Affairs, and the sum of money equal to the principal of his share of annuities and other yearly revenues receivable by or for the use of such a tribe. Now, that act that was passed through Parliament actually gave, it doesn't say that in there, but actually gave them the right to educate the, what they called at that time, savages and Indians. And it was to get the Indian out of the child and why the residential school started in the first place. So now I'm going to talk about an article that was done in Windspeaker by Deborah Steele from Port Alberni. And Deborah is from the Tsleil-Waututh First Nation. She responded with horror and disgust when they learned of the experiments in the 1940s and 50s of the use of nutritional experiments conducted on the children. These experiments were conducted by the Canadian government and the Red Cross, said, and that's what Hugh Breaker has said. Now, Hugh Breaker was a chief counselor up at Tsleil-Waututh First Nation, and we hope to have him on the program next week, and as well as another one of their members, Deb Foxcroft. We're going to be speaking with them next week about their opinions on these experiments. They're from up near Port Alberni. Tests on these children consisted of being denied food and health care treatment in order to study the effects of malnutrition. Port Alberni had the highest incidence of riboflavin deficiency than any other nation. Researchers also discovered children were denied dental treatments and proper health care in these schools as well. It's been proven that the doctors gave the original children less than proper health care treatments when it comes to the dental and medical. Possibly that's because the other government agencies, known as, it used to be called INAC and now it's called AAND, they're the ones that control the funding for health care and dental and so on. They pay your local dentist and doctors for treatments. And as a rule, you know, most of the Canadian public think that they're paying for all of this, but Indian Affairs pays less than average towards healthcare for children, much the same as our education system. It's, you know, we've heard lately how if you're a native, you don't get as much funding for school. This also went, it's still in place as well through INAC. You know, if you have a medical coverage of 90% through Great West Life or something, that's awesome. But if you're a First Nations child and you require dental care, you're given a different level of care. Now, there's also been proven, sorry for pausing all the time, proven, you know, children that needed tubes put in their ears, where average children, you know, non-native children will get plastic tubes in their ears that, you know, don't have any residual effects, where I've come across cases where a child from a native nation had metal ones put in their ears, and when they were taken out, the child was deaf. So it's, you know, it's quite sad when you can do a comparison. On CBC in July of 2013, there was a story that I still find it hard to believe that the public has not grabbed onto in any shape or form. And they provided minutes from a House of Commons committee showing it approved a request from a researcher to continue the experiments on Aboriginal people at Norway House in northern Manitoba in 1944. Now, you know, there again, there's more than enough evidence to prove that there's been some underlying issues here for many, many years. Recent research by the Canadian food historian Ian Mosby, who I also hope to speak to this week, said that there was at least 1,300 original children, mostly children that were used as test subjects in the 1940s and 50s, probing the effectiveness of vitamin supplements. This was confirmed by the current Minister of Aboriginal Affairs, Bernard Valcourt, and he called them apparent examples of the dark ages of the residential school legacy. Now, that's a pretty strong statement from Minister Valcourt, considering that he's the Minister of Aboriginal Affairs, and he doesn't have anything that, you know, doesn't seem that he can do anything about this as well. It's really disturbing to think that all this has gone on, and some of it has been in our lifetime. I'm only in my mid-50s, and I can't believe that this went on while I was a child going to school, that there were still children, same nationality as me, being put through this. I mean, we thought it was bad enough when we were kids that, you know, we had to wear a uniform to school if we were a Catholic, and which I was raised a Catholic. When we went to school, we, you know, we wore uniforms, and the nuns taught us, that's just the way it was. But at the same time, little did we know that there were children being used as experiments. I mean, I don't know too many parents in this day and age that would, you know, if you sent your child off to school and your child came home, which you're lucky that they do, when your child would come home from school and say, oh, you know, I didn't get to eat all day today because somebody wanted to see what it would be like if I didn't get fed for 12 hours. I mean, how would we react as parents? I don't think myself, I don't think I would react very well to that. And I'm sure there's an awful lot of parents that wouldn't. So why is it that now, after all these years, when a traditional person or a native person discusses, brings up any of this that's happened to their in their families, that nothing gets talked about, nothing gets done, nothing at all. I mean, it's everybody's fighting, it seems like we're all fighting a losing battle. So we're going to take a break for a moment here, and Dave's going to play a song for us, and feel free to call in 250-466-4667. Welcome back, folks. You're listening to 98.7 FM, The Lake, and this is the program is called Voices of Original People. You can also find us online at cicv.ca. You can click and listen to us. You can send us an email, and we can put your questions on the air. Next week, we're going to have our program airing early at 2 o'clock Mountain Time. And Pacific Standard Time, okay? My hubby always tells me Mountain Time. Next week, we're going to have a few guests on the show. One of them is Deb Foxcroft, and the other one is Hugh Breaker. And they're from the New Chadneth Tribal Council up near Port Alberni. And we look forward to speaking to them. They've been very vocal about these, the latest, some of the latest things that have come out about the nutritional studies, let's say, in regards to the residential school projects. And so we look forward to having them on the show next week at 2 o'clock. We're going to have a short-form version of our show today due to other things going on. So please feel free to send us an email, and we can put your questions on the air at any time. So we're just going to play some more music here for now. And like I said, next week we're going to be on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon with some special guests. And we look forward to hearing from you there then. Take care, everyone, and have a great week.
We all right now, man. Yeah. One for all. You live, you give. You're listening to Wolf Party, man. And this right here, this right here is a J-Mac production, y'all. We lost Carmen long ago, we lost Tom. Thank you, God, for letting us move on. Thank you, J-Mac, for helping us pull through. To my family, I try hard for you. It's the way you live, it's the way you give. It's the way that you show that you give a shit. You give. And then it's like, one for one and one for all. If you ain't there for one of us, then you ain't there at all. It's that fellowship, man, it's that hello shit. When you see your friends, hang out and tell them shit. I reminisce and try hard not to miss all the good times. I got your best interests in mind.
Lyrically, we've seen it through it all. You shed in our victories and ease on the fall. For all those who know me, I hope you know well. I'm not one to forget, I know that you helped. All the talent I work with, thanks for sharing your strength. You who laughed when I was happy or cried at my pain. Without you, I'm nothing, you're part of the dream. Thank you for giving, supporting the team. For the gods of them beats, you kept me on track. And all those who love me, I love you right back.
Blessing me when having a chance, able to make it out of a place where you never advance. This rap had me twisted, I was rapping out lies. Man, I was down for anything to get a piece of the pie. But yo, what party showed me that it's not about the bling? If I did it all again, man, I wouldn't change a thing. For real, man, all for one, that's how it is. Be real, be one for all, so be like this. I love living life, for friendship is what you have. I declared it to y'all, I know what party will last. God put us together, man, we love and respect. It's all for one, one for all, we'll never forget.